Inspiring solutions to save America one show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes, and I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
All right, hour number three of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. You know, on today, like a Friday, we always have to do this segment with our national security expert, John Guandolo, because I think the value of having a Marine, a former FBI agent who worked years undercover, I think it's great to have somebody who's deeply, at least ensconced in the suck, who knows what it's really all about, to weigh in on this whole Baltimore Bridge thing. John, I want to welcome you back. Go up to 30,000 feet for me. When you saw this thing happen, what did you think?
Intentional. That this was an intentional attack. And I was open to whatever truth, whatever facts were laid out. But the reality is this is a target for the jihadis and, quite frankly, their communist allies. But We know from history that Al-Qaeda, Hamas, ISIS, when they target something and it's on their radar, they don't give up until the target is achieved. Examples would be U.S. Navy ship USS Cole, the World Trade Center, et cetera, right? First time they failed, first time the Al-Qaeda was going to attack in 2000, a U.S. Navy vessel in Yemen. They had overloaded their boats, and the boat sank. So they recalculated, and they hit the coal. When 1993, Ramzi Youssef was being flown by the FBI in a helicopter, transported from one facility to another, the bomber for the 1993 World Trade Center of Al-Qaeda, he looked out the helicopter and told his FBI, the FBI agents, "We're going to bring that down one day." Because that's how they operate. I can tell you, doing the work that I did, that targeting key bridges is absolute, not just bridges like that, other bridges in the, for instance, we worked a number of, and I spoke, and even since I've been out of the FBI, worked with another, a number of people in law enforcement where they have shared with me that key bridges in their areas, they knew from Joint Terrorism Task Force folks, had been targeted. For instance, a bridge that can carry a certain amount of weight, so certain kinds of massive vehicles that carry certain kind of equipment, if that bridge were gone, would literally have to go out of their way 350 miles or more in order to do what they needed to do. And the bad guys know this. And the last example I'll use, you and I actually talked about on this show, was back in 2004, in August of 2004, a senior Hamas operative, Ismail El-Barassi, is driving on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge just south of, if you look at a map, you can see the two on the same small map, which is in Chesapeake Bay, in Maryland. And in fact, he and his wife were doing targeting, pre-attack surveillance, and filming the bridge, the support structures, as pre-attack surveillance for Al-Qaeda. So we know these are the kinds of things they do. And so you have to look at it in that light. Now, of course, you know, people that look at it just in terms of, look, the ship lost power, it plowed into the bridge, it was an accident. There is a possibility it was an accident. I don't believe that, and I don't, when you look at it in the context of what it is, it's very different. That's why I think sometimes my job is different, and even my close friends have said, we get it because we know you, but it is hard sometimes for people to go, I don't get it. Like, I just don't get it. But when you put it inside the understanding of how this enemy operates, the fact that once they target something, it's on their radar, they're going to do it. And we know these are the kinds of things that they, not that they might do, that they are doing, that they have done. This makes perfect sense, especially right now in a time where they have called for increased attacks, where we know strategically they're lining things up for a significant movement, both internally in the United States, like fomenting serious violence, to these kinds of strategic attacks. So the fact that this is happening, I mean, DHS and FBI said this kind of thing is coming just in the last few weeks, in addition to everything I just said. And I'll leave your audience with one more thought regarding if you take an incident like this and you don't put it into context. If a Maryland state trooper pulls over a vehicle and the drivers are black, and people say, well, you know what? 90% of the people that you've pulled over in the last month have been black. That makes you racist. But it's not true, because this particular, and I'm talking about a specific officer that I worked with, his specialty was understanding the routes and the vehicles of drug runners. And very close to 100% of the vehicles he pulled over on certain routes, using certain vehicles at certain times of the night and day, he would pull them over and he would pull out kilos of cocaine in secret compartments because he knew how they built the compartments in. He knew their routes. You see, but if you don't understand it in that context, right, it would be easy to assume one thing when the other is true. And the race or gender of the drivers had nothing to do with why he pulled them over. He pulled out in 1 year more cocaine out of a vehicle than the entire Washington, D.C. office of the DEA was taken down. I mean, it was unbelievable, this guy's success. That's what I'm trying to kind of get across this morning is, when you look at this bridge attack from that perspective, it is very difficult for me to see that it was accidental. I'm still open to it. Still open to it. I have a hard time believing it. The timing is amazing. And
tell me why. Tell me the timing. Why? Because, you know, the FBI said, it's not a terrorist attack. So that means that it is. I'm sorry to say that, but you do the opposite day.
Right. Well, so two things. First, let's talk about what you just said. When the FBI initially says it's not a terror attack, they've been wrong every time. And I don't mean, I'm talking about when something like this happens, Fort Hood, before FBI agents ever rolled across the gates at Fort Hood, they said it was not a terror attack. When Nidal Hassan, a Muslim who was in the army, who was mentored by the Al-Qaeda leader, Anwar al-Awlaki, killed people, they said it wasn't terrorism. They were wrong. The Orlando shooter, they interviewed him and said, you know, he was just crazy. Wrong. The young man at Fort Lauderdale Airport that shot and killed people, the supervisor of the squad that investigated went on TV, said, we interviewed him 3 times. He was just crazy. Wrong. He was a jihadi. Wrong about Boston. I mean, the FBI director was in front of Congress and testified. He was trying to defend it. We spoke to the imam at the mosque before the bombing, doing our outreach, right? A jihadi imam at the Boston Muslim American Society, founded by Al-Qaeda guy, Abdurrahman al-Amoudi, and run by the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood Hamas. And you're doing outreach to their leadership. And you want me to take you at face value that this boat, ship, plowing into the bridge wasn't intentional? They have no credibility. The FBI's counterterrorism division has no credibility in these kinds of things because they've been wrong. They're outreaching to Al-Qaeda and Hamas leaders, and we've talked about that. Exclusively Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah. That's their exclusive outreach partner. So they have been not only wrong, they're batting for the other team, whether they know it or not. And the fact they don't know it just goes to show their gross incompetence and criminal negligence. So across the board, when they come out of the gate screaming no terrorism, it smacks in the face of the reality.
Well, and
so
it's
back to your
interesting that you would say that, John. We're going to bounce to a quick break here, but I want to come back to you because it's so intriguing that the big thing they want to talk about, though, is the words we use, because we don't want to offend people. We don't want to hurt Muslims' feelings by calling them names like jihadist and Islamic extremist. What the hell is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Nothing good for Baltimore, I'll tell you that much. Next, with John Guandolo on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. All right, back with our national security expert, John Guandolo. John, I want to say to you, this rare foundation, you know all about this. Biden's top intelligence agency warns personnel not to use words like jihadist and Islamic extremists because these problematic phrases could hurt Muslims' feelings. I'm just going to make it easy for you, John. What in the hell is that?
So this is actually a line of operation for the Islamic movement in the United States, North America, Europe. And what it is, so your audience understands, this is part of the Islamophobia campaign, which is implementing the Islamic law of slander in Western countries. In Islam, in Islamic law, slander is defined as saying anything about Islam or the Prophet or whatever, that a Muslim would, quote, dislike. It is, that's the legal language. And so it doesn't matter if it's true. You can't say it, and it's a capital crime. So this is really important because the language we saw after 9/11 changed radically. And let me give you a couple examples. The 9/11 Commission received a letter from the Hamas Muslim Brotherhood Group, Muslim Public Affairs Council, saying that the words that the 9/11 Commission used to describe the problem, which included, you know, Islamic terrorism and phrases like that, that was wrong, and so we need to find different language. Now, you could look at that and say, well, who cares? A letter came in, except when you see that the number of times words like jihad and Islam and Sharia were used in the 9/11 Commission report were many, dozens and dozens of times, and in some cases words like Sharia, you know, over 100 times. And then we look at the national security documents that came out, the national security estimate, and others, after that letter came in, and all those numbers go to zero. None of those, and this is over 10 years ago. This is back in, before 2010, before even the major purge. We started, the federal government started kissing the ass of Hamas and Muslim Brotherhood in even greater ways and wouldn't even use the words that they themselves, the jihadis themselves, used to define who they are. So this is really important. They, whether it's Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, Hezbollah, pick one.
they all, whether it's the Boston bombers or the young jihadi who drove a truck over dozens of people in Nice, France, or whether it's the 7/7 bombers, they all say, and they say it in open court, they do videos, they write, they tell you who they are. They say, we are Muslims waging jihad in the cause of Allah in order to establish an Islamic state, a caliphate under Sharia. Now, these are words that used to be used in the government because obviously that's part of our doctrine. You identify a threat based on who they are and who they say they are and why they're doing what they're doing. Well, now, when this is, if there's one key today, it's this for your audience. When you can't use the very words an enemy uses to define himself, then you can't identify the enemy. You can't put your finger on him to beat him. And that is the objective. So it's number one, imposing the Islamic law of slander in the United States. So if you say anything the Muslim community doesn't like, it's a capital crime. And when you're called an Islamophobe, that is a threat on your life, point one. Point two, if you can't identify the enemy, you can never defeat the enemy.
Yeah, I think that sounds very succinct. Apparently, you've got a test. Are you testifying somewhere?
I am. I'm testifying momentarily via a video link in a case regarding a January 6th defendant in Washington, D.C., and I am going to hang up and literally click a link and then stand by for my testimony in that case.
Well, I'm going to let you go, John, with this knowledge that on our live video stream, a Wendy Bell Radio Network app, a donor put out $20 for the January 6th fund, sponsored J6.com. John, would you know that in 2 hours we've received more than $5,000?
That's great to know.
So
great to know people are being wrongly persecuted, and it's great to know that you're supporting that. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate everybody. And you, Mr. Guandolo, happy Easter. Blessings to you and the people you love. And thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you. God bless you.
All right. It's so interesting. The idea of creating a victim, always got to be a victim, whether you're LGBTQIA+, whether you're black, whether you're a woman, whether you are Muslim, whether whatever, there's got to be some extra for you, some protection, some allegations, some claim that you can make to insulate yourself as a victim so that you can get what you want and we'll all just be dumber for it. It's the same strategy, but now it's getting super real. Where will they strike next? Do not go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. I love the smell of pushback in the morning. And I've got two stories, plus good news and bad jokes. It's all on deck next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. I love when I get to report to you that people are rising up and pushing back, that they're tired of being trampled, that they're not going to take it anymore, because we've been the literal pincushions of this administration for far too long. I'm done. I'm done with the pokes. I'm done being prodded. And apparently so's Tony Bobulinski. So I've got two stories of pushback. They're going to make you feel, I think, hopeful. Good Friday. Hopeful. The promise of resurrection, of new birth, of new opportunity, of new chances. I love it. Headline from the Daily Caller. Tony Bobulinski files defamation suit against Fox News personality Jessica Tarlov. Lying has consequences, ladies and gentlemen. Now, on the campaign trail, political candidates can say anything basically they want about each other, which is disgusting, but it's true. But you're not allowed to say lies, purposeful lies about people, and get away with it. And we shared a lot of this with you, which is good. And of course, now it's giving me a, hey, log in. Why don't you log in? So now I'm going to try to log in because it kicked me out. So what Jessica Tarlov was basically saying is that he is a liar, that Tony Bobulinski is a liar, or that he's been talking about things about Joe and Hunter Biden that are factually incorrect. This guy has been nothing but eager to share his story. And all he has wanted is a former Biden family associate is to be heard and for people to take action. And we saw his frustration in front of the House Judiciary and House whatever, Oversight Committee, where he's literally exasperated because he's been saying the same things. How many more times do I need to tell you these things? Well, you shouldn't have to. And so he's filed a defamation lawsuit against Fox News' The Five show co-host, Jessica Tarlov. This happened just yesterday. You are not allowed to make up crap about me and put it out there and think that you can get away with it. You can't. I think it's brilliant. Sadly, I got locked out of that story. This is where I get to show you my prowess as a host. How about this one? Politico. The RNC, and this is really very interesting. The RNC, which as we well know in the last 2 weeks, booted Ronna McDaniel. She moves along. NBC comes in and they're like, you know what? Maybe we need a different voice. Let's have a conservative. Well, she's not. Let's have a rhino come on to the, our news as a contributor. We'll pay her way more money than it's worth. $300,000. This is not a 9-to-5 job. She ain't working 40 hours a week. That I guarantee you. And then everybody there at MSNBC went bananas, melted down, and NBC caved and basically fired after 48 hours Ronna McDaniel. So Ronna McDaniel is now pushing back and she's like, you know what? You violated your terms and you slandered me. You said all this stuff about me that's not true and that's actionable. And I'm going to come for you and my pay. Hey, I say go for it. I don't like the woman. Go for it. How else do you send a message? Well, this is interesting. So the RNC, which she's booted from, is now almost kind of coming to her defense, which is very intriguing. RNC weighs limiting NBC's access at this summer's convention. Legendary. You have to push back. Here's the story from Politico. The Republican National Committee is weighing whether to restrict NBC's access to the summer's convention following the network's decision to drop former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel as a contributor. Such a move would make a dramatic escalation in Mark, I should say, dramatic escalation in the growing rift between Donald Trump allies and the TV network, a rift that has stemmed from NBC's decision to part ways with McDaniel. Amid a revolt among top on-air crybaby talent. I editorialized, but it's my show, and so whatever. We're taking a hard look at what this means for NBC's participation at the convention, said Daniel Alvarez, a spokesperson for the RNC and the Trump campaign. Why is this taking so long? Why do our political candidates agree to debates hosted by people who suck, who are partisan hacks? Period. We continually go back to the same drips and we kowtow to their demands. Look, this MAGA movement, this conservative renewal, revival, this like tent party that we're having, that maybe Donald Trump, we could say, is the ringleader of, or at least the face of. We should decide we're the biggest story going on in the United States, period. It is the reclaiming of the country. And if NBC is going to perpetually and predictably suck, why grant them access? Why are we playing games with people who cheat, with people who lie, with people who demonstrably go on TV and spread lies? Shouldn't we hold these same people accountable for telling us all that it was safe and effective? That once you got it, it stopped with you? That it was magic? That if we all don't work together, then by golly, we're never going to get through this together. Shouldn't we hold responsible all of those talking heads who carried out the propaganda lies of Fauci and Birx and Mike Pence and all these other people of suck? Where do they get held accountable? Because my knowledge of journalism, which is pretty vast, after 30-odd years of it, is that telling the truth is job number one, even when the truth sucks for your party. Just like John Guandolo said, the FBI can no longer be believed. We don't trust you anymore. The CDC and the FDA now settling on ivermectin. Oh, it really isn't a horse dewormer only. It does very effective for things like COVID. Oh, we've long ago lost confidence in you, CDC, FDA. It's like education, higher education. Harvard applications down precipitously. Who wants to go there? Why? Why would you want to be sullied and spend gobs of money to be affiliated with a brand that sucks? It'd be like walking into a bar and be like, you know what? I gots to get me a Bud Light. No, you don't. No. That ship sailed a long time ago. RNC needed to do this. Factual, actual, and it makes me feel good. All right. That being said, do you guys know what time it is? I need some good. Well, my boyfriend, Steve Hartman, over at CBS News. Brock, go ahead.
I think you should first say good news for today is raised over $6,400.
What?
That's what someone's reporting on the stream.
$6,400. See, this is the cascade effect when one person says, you know what, I'm going to give $20 to the supportj6.com fund. And then in the course of an hour and a half, $6,400 is raised. I'm going to go with that's beyond good news. That's great news. So thank you to you for that. Beyond that, my boyfriend, yes, he is. He doesn't know it, but he is. Steve Hartman from CBS News has traveled to Massachusetts, if I'm not mistaken. And he has found a very lovely story about a sick boy who's basically homebound and thought he would only be able to look at his world through a big window until everything in the world came to him. Enjoy.
Aside from immediate family, no one is allowed in the house to see 3-year-old Quinn Waters.
I want to get up there.
And more importantly, Quinn can't go out.
We basically keep him in a bubble just as a precaution.
Even a cold, a common cold, could be something that will bring him back into the hospital.
Parents Jarlath and Tara Waters of Weymouth, Massachusetts, say Quinn's natural immunity was temporarily wiped out after he got a stem cell transplant to treat his brain cancer.
We are Italian.
Fortunately, the kid is a fighter who has retained a mostly positive attitude.
Do you want a drink or anything, dude?
No, thank you.
But it still stinks.
He sees all of this happening, and he knows he's stuck inside. And there would be days.
Days when Quinn is literally pounding to get out.
Unfortunately, staring out a window is a poor substitute for walking out a door. For the last 2 months, Quinn's connection to the outside world has been limited to whoever passes by. Which hasn't been all that limiting, actually.
It started off with family members, like, come to the window.
Then the neighbors started showing up to entertain with non-contact art projects.
This is like a Picasso.
And other stupid human tricks. Next, the police caught wind. And pretty soon, top-notch performers were just showing up on Quinn's front lawn.
It's turned into like a vaudeville stage out there.
Yeah, the window kind of became his window to the world, yeah. You know?
Today, you never know what might happen by. 1 minute, it could be a dog parade.
Look at that dog.
The next, a team of Irish step dancers. Everyone brought together by word of mouth and a will to help Quinn get better. Which his parents say is happening.
It's the positive energy from all these people that we believe has gotten him through his sickness, you know? You can never repay, you know? Just maybe pay it forward, you know?
Being indebted has never felt so fortunate.
Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn.
Steve Hartman, on the road, in Weymouth, Massachusetts.
It's just the best. Just the best. 37 miles, ladies and gentlemen. 37 miles. Quick time out. When we return on the Wendy Bell Radio program, it is time for your horrible jokes. Bad Joke Friday next. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a full docket here. Holy mackerel, you guys really responded to the bad jokes. All right, without further ado, my friends, as Brock is realizing he's not ready. Oh!
Ladies and gentlemen, I just flew in from New York and boy, are my arms tired. I'm joking, of course. Anywho, welcome to the Comedy Club. Won't you give it up to Wendy and Brock for Bad Joke Friday?
All right, the first joke is always from Dr. Richard Rafferty at the Disc Institute of Pittsburgh. He said, and by the way, the rules, we don't read these in advance. So if you send them in, they're dirty. Please don't. Okay?
Ish. FCC regulations, please don't.
Guy goes into a bar. He says, the bartender, I'll have a whiskey for myself and a whiskey for my friend Michael. The bartender says, well, who would you like to wait for your friend Michael to arrive for his whiskey? He says, would you rather? Man says, no, he's with me now. Man reaches into his shirt pocket, pulls out a man about 4 inches high and puts him on the bar. The bartender is beside himself with joy. He says, my goodness, I've never seen anything like this in my life. That's a real man? Yeah, it's a real man. The bartender says, that is amazing. And he drinks whiskey? Yeah, sure. Michael, show the man how you drink whiskey. Michael jumps onto the glass, leans in, and starts to sip the whiskey. Bartender, totally beside himself. I have never seen anything like this. What else can he do? Can he dance? Sure can. Michael, give the man a dance. Michael does a little dance, hopping around the bar. Bartender says, I swear to God, I can't believe this. He says, this is totally unbelievable. What else can Michael do? Can he talk? The man says, sure, Michael can talk. Michael, tell the man about the time we were in Africa and you called the witch doctor a jagoff.
So a tourist says, is it hard to spot a cheetah?
Yeah.
The guide said, I wouldn't know. They're born that way.
Oh, God. Why couldn't the green pepper practice archery? Because he didn't have an arrow.
Yeah. A mom says, my kids have been on eBay all day.
Oh, boy.
The other person said, that usually means you should lower the price.
Jake goes into a pet shop to buy a parrot. The shop owner points to three identical parrots on a perch and says, the parrot on the left costs $500. Why does it cost so much? Jake asks. Well, the shopkeeper replies, that parrot knows how to use a computer. Jake then asks about the next parrot and is told it costs $1,000 because it can do everything the other parrot can do. Plus, it knows how to install a network. Naturally, Jake asks about the third. That one's $2,000? Wow, what's so special about that one? Well, to be honest, I have never seen it do anything, but the other two call him boss.
Wow.
You like that a little too much?
Yeah, that one was
a little too much.
Why did the orange stop halfway across the road?
Oh, I don't know.
It ran out of juice.
What type of music should you listen to when fishing? Something catchy.
Oh, gosh. Where do snowmen get information?
Oh.
They search for it on the winternet.
A man working with an electric saw accidentally cuts off all of his fingers. At the emergency room, his doctor says, give me the fingers and I'll see what I can do. But I don't have the fingers, the injured man replies. Well, why didn't you bring them, the doctor asks. How was I supposed to pick them up?
That's a solid point. That's a solid point.
Wow.
Why are skeletons so calm?
Oh, why?
Because nothing gets under their skin.
Why do you call a gender, well, excuse me, what do you call a gender neutral person who is lactose intolerant?
Oh, boy.
Non-binary.
That's actually funnier than I thought it was going to be. Leave the research to us professionals. Data shows the crow is the hardest bird to hit with your vehicle. There's always another crow nearby yelling, car, car.
Oh, geez.
That's bad.
It was terrible.
Poorly delivered, too.
A farmer decided to pull a prank on Easter Sunday. After the Easter egg hunt, he sneaks into the chicken coop, replaces every egg with a brightly colored one. Minutes later, the rooster walks in, spots all the colored eggs, then storms out and beats up the peacock. I don't know what that means.
Neither do I.
Okay, good.
Someone asked me why I was so delusional. I told them my reality check bounced.
What part of the body is the last to die? The pupils. They dilate.
Oh, God. Why do trees hate tests?
Something about, I don't know.
Because the answer always stumps them.
So dumb. What did Mr. Peanut say to his wife before he left the house? Don't worry. I'll be back in a jiff.
That's actually funny. Parallel lines have so much in common. It's a shame they'll never meet.
Oh, gosh. Dad, can you explain to me what a solar eclipse is? No, son.
How can you tell it's a dogwood tree?
Hmm.
By the bark.
I went to the library and asked if I could borrow the DVD of Batman Forever. They said, no, I have to return it next week. I don't know why that's funny. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Batman Forever?
Oh, next
you have to return it next week?
Okay.
Wow. I had a date last night and it was perfect.
Oh.
Tomorrow I'll have a fig.
What?
I had a date.
Yeah?
Like a date.
Oh, a date.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm telling you. Shut up.
Get it together, lady.
I accidentally played dad instead of dead when a bear attacked, and now I can ride a bike without training wheels.
Why did Waldo go to therapy?
Uh-oh.
Because he needed to find himself.
I asked my wife why she married me. She said, because you're so funny and you make me laugh so much. I told her I thought it was because I was so charming and good looking. And she replied, see, you're hilarious. Terrible.
While playing golf today, I hit two good balls.
Mm-hmm.
I stepped on a rake.
The other day, I bought an old record album at a thrift store called Sounds Wasps Make. When I got home and played it, it didn't sound anything like wasp sounds. And then I realized I was playing the B-side.
Oh, gosh. Where did Captain Hook get his hook?
Hmm.
At a secondhand store.
A recent study found people who drink their coffee black are more likely to exhibit psychopathic traits, while people who order a quad shot non-fat vanilla soy extra foam light whip with caramel drizzle are more likely to be their victims.
Wait, you drink your coffee black?
I do! Boom! Ladies and gentlemen, all of you who helped us raise over $6,000 for sponsorj6.com, thank you. I love you. Happy Easter. Peace.